And that is the whole question of the whole hold on, hold on.
Kevin, just because I missed the last 2 meetings, can you just tell me again, you said that Marina is working on a document along those lines.
Mm-hmm. This will be our first
meeting,
and
I'm
going to
finish
today, November.
Okay. Yeah. I'm just explaining
November. No, that's fine. Actually, I just wanted clarification.
Okay, so the proposal is that minutes can become a little double if you just keep on skipping missing in the and that we should make an effort today, even though we're still trying to dispose of the last data. The data here on the attempt to keep okay such a mail on the base.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A preliminary concern, usually I'm not terribly concerned about minutes. We all know that they're not necessarily things on which a great deal hinges. We began this process in the awareness that we have some pending litigation, and we came together as colleagues to find a solution problem, and we committed one another to dealing with this issue in good faith. With goodwill and in earnest. We are receiving these minutes and the various drafts under the name of Annexure 11, Annexure 10, and Annexure 9. Mm. I also read the way they are drafted, and forgive me for being suspicious. Mm. I've negotiated with Mr. Jeffrey for many years, and perhaps I got spoiled in thinking things are not the way they appear. But my first immediate reaction is this is documentation prepared for the purpose of litigation and to be paid in a responding affidavit, the tenure of which was this action is premature because we are working on the issue, therefore there is no rightness, and the Honorable Member jumped the gun. Now, all these discussions, I understood them as discussions in good faith, and I would like this to be recorded, that these are discussions in good faith, akin to settlement negotiations, and as such, neither the minutes of what we do here can be used in litigation. And I'm saying this because I see a number of glaring inaccuracies between what I understood having been agreed here in our discussion and what has been minuted. And so if I need to look at the court document, I need to go line by line and remind everyone of what was actually agreed and not agreed. If these are minutes along the same lines of minutes we always keep, and they're not that important, so I think there must be some clarity on the lay of the land.
Look, I don't know enough about court cases, but I would imagine that he who alleges the truth, if anybody alleges the truth, should come to truth. Come to the evidence of any thing. The only thing can be rebutted in the court case. So I don't think we should be bogged down by potential impending litigation I'm just saying that as a general rule of practice, I don't know enough about the rules of evidence. Thank you. well it can be survived. Later comments they are good, but it would be better served if we had lost the time. Because I understand what you said, that none of the time that we have available, we have to go down and put it. So it's not as if we only have the time. So my suggestion is that let us point them out.
No, look, I think it's been covered, but the is not. I mean, the minister here, we can adopt them if there are amendments. If those amendments get moved, but let's not get bogged down into a discussion on the minister.
I'm just trying to get the mindset.
Yes, Mr. Samuda?
I'm just indicating that I was present at that meeting, that's all.
Oh, all right. All right. Anybody else? All right. Any mover?
Okay, now I have a number of points.
All right.
First of all, and I want to put my understanding of what was agreed, because if my understanding is incorrect, there is no point in my pointing out to the inaccuracies in the minutes. But my understanding is that within this committee there was agreement that any reformulation of the rules must proceed from the fact that the members have the right to introduce legislation under the Constitution, and the job of the private members' committee is only one of formal analysis and not approval on the merit and or desirability of a bill. That was my understanding of the lengthy discussion we had. If my understanding is correct, what is recorded here is incorrect. So this is the first thing that
is there a particular wording that
you particularly concern? No, it's not a matter of wording, it's a matter of concept. Am I correct in my understanding of what was agreed?
Yes, so can I suggest, I mean, the usual process for consideration of the minutes is you take the minutes and you then look at amendments. So it's page one of the many amendments. We've done page one in the sense in which Dr. Mulder was investment in the state. And that any changes that Dr. Ambrosini wants to move, then get moved from the relevant place. So he could decide under page 5, where it says Dr. Ariani Ambrosini then explained rules 2, 3, 5, 3, and 4 were unnecessary, and he could say, no, he didn't say it like that, he said it like this. But that gets proposed as an amendment. So please, let's not have a general discussion, let's go on specific amendments.
That's why I was talking about the formulation.
Okay, on page 2, Mr. Chairman, the explanation given by the Japanese delegation on how they introduce bills in their parliament, and I accepted that there was a difficulty in both them understanding the questions and the translation, but I understood that all that was required for them to introduce a bill and not a proposal was 20 signatures, and they specifically excluded them, that the standing committee on the rules would have any decision on whether a bill should be proceeded on, which is again said by the third line, fourth line of page 2. It says Mr. Matsumoto explained that the proposal is to be submitted to the House of Representatives with at least 20 signatures. Correct. Whereafter, it would go to the Standing Committee on Rules for a decision on whether it would proceed. Incorrect. So I move on account of accuracy for the deletion of the sentence beginning with whether and ending with proceed.
Look, I'm not sure whether it's really matching, because none of us would use a verbal narration or excavation of the system. We do not have the message of the actual rules that are used for accuracy or to believe that we accurately have to keep the system there. And you know, what we heard was based on interpretation as well. So words can be
Yeah, but I did not hear this being said. I heard the contrary being said. So I'm not speaking as per how the Japanese system works, which I don't know, and you correctly say that we don't know. I'm speaking as per what was said in this room by those gentlemen.
Because we do have a record, not only of the secretary, but also of CMG, who recorded the president in attendance, and they heard the same thing.
Well, they are not here. We can only, unless documents are produced and recordings are based, I don't think that the minute taker can rely on documents which are not before us. We have the responsibility of adopting our minutes. So I'm putting to you, Mr. Chairman, and through you to the committee, my recollection, and I call on your recollection to see whether it's the same.
Maybe just to because my worry is that if we're starting like this, we've got 3 sets of minutes to propose, we're going to be here, or we'll finish the meeting with adopting the minutes, and I think the key thing is to resolve the issues on the table. We've got a draft set of minutes. Let Dr. Ambrosini and anyone else who's interested submit written amendments. Those then can be submitted to Hendrik Scrivener, and they can then check, for example, with PMG, whether they can. You've still got.
Yeah,
you've got the recording. Yeah. Okay. They can then check, but I think that would be a much better angle than trying to go each time. We don't need to adopt the minutes to proceed with the resolving the issue.
All right, that's fine. I think that's a reasonable. I had hoped we would actually propose this with the next meeting. It might be possible to propose it next time. Hopefully, next time we meet, we'll be in a better position. All right, then that takes us to one of the two main agenda items today. And that is the finalization of the right and the youth legislation. Legislation in terms of 54, 57, and special education goes to a 9, to a 15, and a 15.5, and think it's necessary at this stage to go back to the more background here. Honorable Amorosini has made a proposal to the Roots Commission to have the request to the Roots Commission to ice cream and then back to the Roots Commission. They think that the establishment of this committee and private membership proposes is unconstitutional, and the role that it plays in the process of unconstitutional definition of the opinions that in fact we understand that this is pending litigation relating to the matter of the parliament. At our last meeting, we have gone to the point where, informed by input from the relevant committee staff, the secretariat of this committee prepared last rule, which we considered and agreed in large measure with most of the proposals made in those rules, except for issues we requested the secretariat to go and look further and come back. Sure. They've done that, and they furnished us with a new set of draft rules with additions, sections that are indicated to underline them, and basically that will suggest the changes that have been added to the initial draft that they put before us. Mr. Ambrosini has, in the meantime, honored responded to that task by finishing an alternative draft that seeks to effect further adjustment to what has been, what has to be revised version. Both documents have been published for everybody.
I don't have Dr. Ambrosini's document.
All right, let me also explain that the Ambrosini approached me with a request that after I had been getting the target we agreed that he would be furnished with the contact details of all members of the committee so that we can calculate. If we have a copy of this proposal, can we find a way of
it was sent to your John Jay.
I'm apologizing for not having they probably were emails and
I think they were.
Probably some people were not aware of the email. But in the meantime, perhaps we could start discussing the issue. I think the comments from Dr. Ambrosini revolve around one of the points. Which is the additional new around the country focus on giving the second that they have already established the next one. Is anybody who would want to do a lot of this from the process? Would you want us to
work? I'll let me talk about it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will try to be very quick. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Honorable Jeffrey, for preparing the floor. The issue is what it is that we want to do. And I would like to shift attention away from the drafting and focusing on our decision. If our decision is that of enabling members of parliament to introduce a bill as a matter of right and not on the ground of their mission. That's one thing. With a qualifier that a certain number of additional members would support it. If we need to retain a process of permission based on the merit of the analysis, a different, or the merit of the bill is a different thing. The bill that we received from the Secretariat, the draft that we received from the Secretariat, maintains a discretional process in terms of which a member of parliament can only introduce a bill if he and the other 10 people behind him receive a permission, which permission is given on the grounds of desirability. I did not understand that having been decided. I understood that our decision was that there is a right, we agree to limit, condition, qualify that right that is not individual, but we give it to a group of people, 10 or 20 that it may be. But once those 20 people want to introduce a bill, the only requirements are formal. Make sure there is no similar pending legislation. Make sure that it's properly drafted. Make sure that government is not about to introduce something very similar so that it's preemptive. So this being formal requirements. So I'd like to have clarity on these two options. And those two options are really the differences between the draft submitted by the Secretariat, which maintains a discretional permission, and the draft which I submitted, which creates a process of formal scrutiny only for a bill introduced with the support of 10 members. In my draft, 10 members sign a bill, it goes to the private members committee, they make sure that there is no pending legislation, that it's not unconstitutional, that there is no intention of government of introducing something within a year. They do so in 6 months otherwise, or 5 months, otherwise it's going to be deemed as being done. And then the bill is introduced. The proposal stands up in parliament, introduces the bill for 1 minute, 2 minutes, is referred to a portfolio committee, where if the portfolio committee wants to get rid of it in 5 minutes on the vote on non-desirability and moves on with its own agenda. So there is no downside. It's not going to hijack the work of parliament. It's not going to diminish the grip of the majority, the righteous grip of the majority on the agenda. It just gives an opportunity for the constitution to be implemented, as it is in all democratic parliaments of the world. If we are trying to correct the issue of constitutionality, what is submitted by the Secretariat doesn't fix it. It will not pass muster constitutionality if the problem of constitutionality we wish to correct is one of transforming a constitutional power into something which can be exercised only on authority and permission of somebody else. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sure that Mr. Jeffrey wants to.
I wasn't in the previous meeting, but I have read the minutes, so I hope I've followed and won't be overlapping too much. But I think let me take issue first of all with Dr. Andersini's point that there's no downside. If the bill gets referred, if he puts it to the committee, and it can dispense with it in 5 minutes, according to him. My concern is that there are certain requirements in our constitution for public participation in the legislative process. That has been interpreted by the court to mean that you've got to advertise for public hearing on bills, or for public input on bills, and if there's an interest from the public, if the public wants to be heard, you've got to have a public hearing. So my concern is the moment this legislative proposal becomes a bill, then it is going to be subject to those requirements too. I can't see how the National Assembly or its committees can dispense with a bill without public input. So I don't agree with Dr. Ambrosini that the committee can dispense with it in a short space of time, 5 minutes. I think if once the bill is introduced, it would have to be gazetted, it would have to be advertised for public comment, hearings would have to be held if the public want to, and before a decision can be taken. If you wouldn't, Parliament would not be able to reject the private member's bill without that public input. So that's my concern, that to actually allow anyone to introduce bills, any member, would bog us down incredibly in terms of the work of Parliament. So that's really the main thrust. I don't read that section of the Constitution the same as Dr. Andersini does. Remember, it reads, I've got it in front of me, but it reads only a cabinet minister, a committee, or a member of parliament may introduce the bill. So it's a restricted issue on who may introduce. I wouldn't see it as conferring rights, then it would be saying a member of parliament, a cabinet minister, a member of parliament, a committee may introduce the bill. But it doesn't say that, it says only. So that's the thing, and I think it's natural that you have a screening mechanism, and I think the process works quite well now, where the private members committee that looks at the proposals does do quite a bit of work. I personally think they do more work than they maybe need to, but they do deliberate on a bill for some time. You do need that screening process. But really, and then the other aspect just to raise is if you're going to argue, as Dr. Ambrosini does, that provision gives the right to members to introduce legislation, then you can't then come and say, well, you need a requirement of 10%, because that's completely against that right. So I don't think you can do those two things at the same time. But basically, Chair, in short, I think we have to be very careful not to provide for the introduction of private bills, because once a bill is introduced, then it is subject to the public participation requirements before any decision can be taken. And the only way one could get rid of a bill would be if it lapses, as I think is the case in America. I don't know whether, I mean, America, they have like 300, Dr. Ambrosini would know better than me, 300 bills a year. You then have to argue to get your bill on the order paper for consideration, and most of them lapse. So the only way we would be able to get rid of our bills is through lapsing. But if you took a decision on a bill without involving the public, then I'm sure somebody could argue that there hasn't been public participation in the rest of the process. And if we do that, we will be spending all our time and money having hearings on private member schools and not actually doing the legislative program of the government that has the mandate. So I don't think it should be looked at as a party, an ANC thing. I mean, Western Cape, Mr. Ellis, you know, if you want your Honourable Premier Zilla to be spending her time dealing with ANC private members' bills, I'm sure you don't.
Mr. Speaker, may I just clarify a point?
I'm sorry. Trying to avoid dialogue, I want us to share the engagement around the table and, collate it as much as possible.
So maybe just in short, I agree with the Secretariat's draft rules. I mean, I think it sets out the procedure. I'm a bit uncomfortable with the 20 members, because I just think that's inconsistent with the original argument that was a right. It would lead to a proper canvassing of the proposal, and so I would agree with it. My concern with Dr. Ambrosini is that it refers to the introduction of the bill, and it will not. I disagree with it fundamentally that it can be dispensed with in 5 minutes in portfolio committee.
Before I comment, and before I even invite and also on the senior, whether that was a master or a child, I want to throw it around the table, allowing
thank you, Chair. I want to apologize for the discussion. Just to take up one of the points that you think we need to bear in mind with the Constitutional Court, the marriage of the legislature to control the government and the general public by way of pulling the commission to the government.
assume that they ask him to detail a harsh dispatch. Any other colleagues that you are there's a few areas for
thank you, sir. Just a quick comment. Sorry for being late. We had a chauffeur of Dorsha earlier. My recollection of the discussion last week was a combination of what Mr. Jeffrey and I said and what Mr. Christine has in these proposals. I don't think the intention was that we said that a bill could be introduced straight. I thought the gist of the discussion was really to talk about the criteria to make it easier for the private members of the committee to operate. What happens in practice now is that the committee discusses the subject, the content, the substance matter of bills before it. And there's no clear guidelines for the committee to determine whether a proposal technically should proceed to the next stage or not. So in that sense, I'm very happy to see, for example, 235A in the machining proposal, those things are in line with what we discussed. But I take the point of Mr. Jeffrey that I'm not so sure whether it's constitutional for a member to introduce a bill. I'm not an expert in that. The Constitution and the rules up to now gave the authority to members of the proposal, which became a bill eventually if it passed the third hurdle. So that thing, I'm a little bit unsure whether I can go along or our party can go along with the proposal which says a bill can be introduced up front. If clearly the constitutional guidance is that it's acceptable, certainly it's possible that at this stage, but I don't think it's possible. Just that comment that says.
Mr. Tony, can I?
I want to correct a point of clarity because otherwise we have a discussion on something which may be erroneous. Mr. the Honorable Jeffrey stated that the Constitution requires us to hold public hearings. I don't think that the statement is correct. It's not a correct statement of law and it's not a correct statement of practice. So much so that very often we hold public hearings on something which is not a bill. It happens in finance all the time. And then at the end of the public hearings, once we interact with the department, the bill gets formally introduced. It gets introduced by the minister and then goes to committee. I mean, we adopted all this legislation on your taxes, 129 pages, was introduced on one day. It went to the committee for 3 hours. And then it was passed the day after. That's the formal aspect of the introduction and passaging of the bill. Everything that happened before, which were lots of public hearings, so there was lots of interaction, was before. And there are many bills on which public hearings are not held. So I am not aware of a constitutional requirement. And I think that that's quite crucial. I think that the committee has the power, and perhaps one can point me to the section of the Constitution where it is spelled out. A committee has the power to get rid of a bill in a matter of 2 seconds on ground of desirability, and has the power to just decide to do nothing about the bill and let it lapse, and has the power of never bring it to the assembly, and therefore never bringing it to the for discussion on second reading.
All right. I'll allow you to respond. But I just want to indicate also that I hope we're not going to get what of the
I think it's fairly fundamental. I mean, the Constitution is not particularly clear, but I mean, it is the Doctrine for Life case. And basically what the Constitutional Court found there was that, and it was consistent with Doctrine for Life, the Matatiel case as well, was that the public needs to be given an opportunity for input. And if they want to exercise that input, then they need to be given the opportunity to exercise it. So the problem with the abortion amendment, what the termination of pregnancy amendment was that certain bodies in KwaZulu-Natal, I think it was, in Gauteng, indicated that they wanted the opportunity to make an input. Those legislators didn't give them that input, and the procedure was struck down as flawed because of that. It's not a requirement that there has to be public hearings for everything. So there was another case, another bill that was also taken to court in the same process, and that was against the technicians amendment bill. And basically nobody, with respect to the dentist, was at all interested in making any position on that bill. So that bill went through. But the termination of pregnancy was struck down on the basis that people indicated they wanted to make an input and they were not given the opportunity. So this is to ensure that Dr. Ambassini understood me correctly. It's not a requirement that there has to be hearings every time. But I think as far as the legislative process that we follow here, we do advertise for public input. And if there's a willingness from the public, a desire from the public to be heard orally, we have to hear them. I'll ask Dr. Palat. So it's good to look at that case. So in short, and the problem is going to be that most of your private members' bills are not going to be particularly technical. They're going to be fundamentally political. So there will be a lot of public interest in those bills. And I think that is quite clear, and that's the basis of my argument, effectively, that if you follow Dr. Ambrosini's route, we will not be able to dispense in 5 minutes. Just maybe to indicate to the DA that, I mean, 235A, I think it has come from the Secretariat. Dr. Ambrosini included into his draft, but the fundamental difference is that Dr. Ambrosini's draft is that introduction appears to be largely automatic after that processing. The Speaker must, if you look at the top of page 3, the Speaker must place the committee's report together with the member's bill on the order paper for introduction. And my argument would be if there's public interest in the bill, once it's been introduced, that you would not be able to dispense with the bill to take a decision on it unless you had a public participatory process. If there's public interest, but I think in most private members' bills it would be. And then we get completely bogged down procedurally.
Yeah,
if you,
and I'll come to what I'm trying to get at is that there's a whole lot of technical issues that we can really spend much of reaction on regulation. And we can disagree on various issues and we can agree on the basis. There are certain core issues around which I think we must revise in how we progress. The issue, for example, relating to what the implications of anti-gifting is quite a consensus subject. One of the aspects of consequences that they have pointed to is the obligation of having in compliance with the constitutional around the ministry. This clarify the context in terms of the context, that it's not in all cases that the current public consultation has occurred, but certainly there is substantial interest in public investment that an obligation kicks in. So there will obviously from time to time be that it's not an overwhelming majority of the problem. The other issue is that the fundamental difference between the legislative proposal as the word is there and what is being proposed, which is a vote, which has a specific meaning, and therefore, once in trigger a particular set of obligations, institutional obligations in this point. Whether in all instances or in most instances, but nevertheless, and given the fact that the 400 appointments in each come with their audience proposals, have a consequence where the entire system is closed and locked down beyond any form of function. We in any case would need to look at the issue from the how we that a member has a right to really trigger a situation where the institution is under for example, Marina could give some idea of what the implication of intervention would be so that we get a focus. So the real issue is, are we saying that to have a social where certain things will be thrown out, but there will be those things that really everybody agrees with merit in them being allowed space to actually come through. And then I'm talking of the social and that therefore we should actually whacken them out. Make sure that whatever rules we have will allow for the initial solution, because the alternative would be a situation where this house is clogged with all kinds of issues, which some of which may be purely trivial. For example, I suggested the further criteria that is a goal or proposal. Of a frivolous and vexatious nature. Why should the system be dropped down with something that clearly should not be subject to that kind of rental? So I'm just saying that that is the overarching constitution. And we can talk about the constitutional interpretation of the different provisions, but at a practical level, we have it. I think the Japanese pointed to the fact that when a government rules is devoted into power, that government is expected to believe and to actually introduce policy and that position is there to have a good go at it. But ultimately, the principle of majority rule would be returned to the higher. And it's accepted in what we as the concept of adoption of democratic. Now, I don't think it helps to go the route of simply solving the system and running function. Because at the end of the day, that's not really solve or change the underlying principle, which is that today. And I don't think that I'm just going to tell you that. We all agree that it's given. I think we should seriously consider avoiding a situation where we're calling a situation where we can do the I doubt if any court will find it here in function a situation where such an anarchy would be allowed to be and hence the Constitution provides. Parliament precisely for now to be a functional institution. Mr. Mark Ellis, at every other occasion, find this to get that out to be held to the
equivalent.
I'm trying to do David's job. I'm not sure if they haven't started doing it. But all right, I just wanted to very
briefly. No, I just wanted to raise the provision in Section 59 of the Constitution that provides that the National Assembly must be the public of the legislature and other places of the Assembly. Now, in addition to what is in the Constitution, have more than one constitution of ruling. JJ is referred to the Justice of Life and the Matapur in the which clearly says that you can't just introduce a bill in the next 5 minutes that that is true. That's been kicked out. And so now, in every process that involves legislation, we have to bear that in mind. It's one of the reasons why the public register then should gain the second day in which to change the existing membership of that. I don't know if it's just measurable. Because the moment you bring amending legislation to Parliament, that kicks in. You must advertise for the public submission. When you refuse it, decide whether you have public hearing, have the public hearing, go through that entire process, debate the bill in the National Assembly, refer it to the National Council of Parliament. They have their own process.
Let's not have an open I wanted Marina to just say something about what the whole idea of central government is about in Parliament, what the conversation of saying in terms of the institutional response, in terms of the machine.
They also be able, with some constitutional process or some rule process, to bring certain proposals to the body that represents all the people in the Republic of South Africa. If the idea would be to bog down Parliament or provincial legislation, then nobody can support that. But we need a simple question for the Constitution to be interpreted. Now, have a look at the two legal opinions that we have. And with all due respect, the one that's not in question and the other one I think I can believe. I'm of the view that members don't have the right to introduce legislation. So we can try to go and say, no, well, because of this, there's all these practical reasons, we cannot do so in just an individual, but that will not change what the Constitution makes possible to happen. So regardless of what we decide today, the Constitution should be interpreted, and only the Constitution Court is able to do that. As a member of that right, then there's nothing that he can do in terms of his interest. I believe it's possible that a member does have that.
Can I just in response to that indicate that my sense is that there is nobody who is the institution, I mean, it's in the Latin law. That the Constitution makes provision for a member to be paid to introduce legislation. And legislation at some point must be started becoming very whatever it has been, it has been a book, the whole administration process. Perhaps that's still a third week for
No, I don't agree. I mean, if you look at Mr. Castle's opinion on this, I mean, he doesn't actually say very much. He takes it from the way it's written. And as I said, that the point for me is the clause does not read
a member may introduce a bill. Okay? The clause reads only a member may introduce a bill. Okay? And I think there's a difference. And the point I'm really wanting to make, so in other words, it's restrictive. Only a cabinet. It doesn't say a cabinet member or deputy minister, a member of a committee may introduce the bill. It says only they. So it's restrictive. Only these people can introduce those bills, not anyone else. If it was wanting to confer an absolute right on members, then that word only would not have been there. It would have said a member. It would have been much more explicit. The key thing that I think we want to see, and I think that the existing procedures are not far, and I think the concern, as everybody said, and I don't want to go for overkill, is once you have a bill, the public participatory processes. The key thing, I think, is that you want members to have the opportunity to table their legislative proposals, as they do at the moment. You have this then vetting, which is more procedural vetting rather than policy vetting. And then it goes to the House. The proposal goes to the House for a decision. So there is also the opportunity for the member to have his or her proposal debated. But it's a proposal only. And the House can, and then it is if the House rejects it because of majoritarianism and the election result, that's the end of it. My fear is where a bill is introduced and you've then got to follow all the public participatory processes set out in Doctors for Life. So I would really appeal. So number one, I don't think the Constitution is so clear cut. An advocate Katz does not actually motivate. He really simply goes on, it's a plain language reading of that section, and if you look at, he misses the only. If you look on page 5, he doesn't underline the only. And I think that only is quite relevant. That what you have at the moment then is a system, and I think that's what I would agree with, where members can table legislative proposals, they can have them considered, they can even have them debated in the House. But it's not a bill, because if it's a bill, then that's going to involve the public.
I think that my attempt to summarize was essentially to say the Constitution does make it possible for a bill that is introduced by a member to actually come to the in as much as it makes it possible for such a bill to come to the executive. Now, the issue really is, and they did make the point that they are not necessarily mean that this is the right where a member could approach the House directly without any system Now, I assume that is the understanding that there is, and hence I gave the background to show me that it would be unconscionable in any way. Well, of course, in my view, to be on topic, that to me, that all the 400 of us from the Black College so that is the context of what I'm saying, however this does not mean that the system that has been created, that's in place, or that is supposed to be created through this modification and supposed to be implemented, have the effect of completely arresting the member there has been private members legislative proposals that have been escalated to status of role and even went so far as the public by Parliament and the President at a practical level that has actually happened. But I have some
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to follow, I'd like to think is the important thing in our discussion. We need to determine our area of maneuverability, because we need to determine what the Constitution requires. And this, our discussion must proceed from this, and we must have consensus on what the Constitution requires. There are two aspects of what the Constitution requires which are becoming relevant to our discussion. The right of members to introduce a bill exists, doesn't exist, number one. Number two, the measure of public participation that the Constitution requires to take place in Parliament. I have a different reading from those two cases than the Honorable Jeffrey put into this committee. I'm not going to go there because I want to make a process proposal. But the main tenet of democracy is that people out there are represented through us. It's a representative democracy, so they don't speak directly and they make input to us. The reading that Mr. Jeffrey is offering, where it's written only, would limit the absurdity of Parliament ever having the power through its rule to bar cabinet members, ministers, deputy ministers, from introducing legislation. It's the only describes the class within which Parliament can do as it wishes in giving and taking away rights, could do it in respect of cabinet members. So these are the two issues of constitutionality which are relevant. What I suggested, we have before us an opinion from Advocate Cass. It's two lawyers, three opinions. It's unavoidable. But why don't we ask the Cape Bar to give us an opinion on these two issues, to guide our deliberation? If two or three senior advocates with experience in constitutional law who can look at the Constitution, who can look at the two cases in the Constitutional Court, who can determine what it is that we in this committee are allowed to consider and what we're not allowed to consider. Because, after all, Mr. Chairman, we are providing for the future, and this is a young democracy, and I am very optimistic about the future. And there will be a future in which majority do not necessarily, bills are always adopted by majorities. It is not a privilege of a minority, but majorities may be able to form around ideas, around legislation, irrespective of political party. So a bill can receive majority support with one third of the ANC, one third of the DA, etc. So my proposal is, let's encapsulate these two constitutional issues, which are the two guiding constitutional issues. There is no point for us continuing to discuss them. Let's defer them to experts, whoever the experts are, Vintrain, Grover, Gauntlet, and let's see what guidance we can receive.
And I've worked in the government department, in which kind of things involved in Parliament. And we landed the 7 positions below on what constitutional correct is not. Not for you, but we still experience tells us that you will always get information that you that will get voted. My suspicion that Dr. Milton, who has to make the agreed substantially with some of your ideas at the MCPC level, will make sure that he's not established saying that thing. So that happens where you have more and more done than you can. I am not inclined to turn this committee into a constitutional court. There has been an opinion, kindness from the legal approach. We have had another opinion from the legal advisor from Parliament, so already there are two legal opinions. And around the table we have as many lawyers as now. but quite a substantial number of including yourself. So maybe really the law is not so much what we need. Chances are that within a law developed human will be influenced in different directions, and we might never arrive at a common after we spend incredible amount of time. So I think that ultimately we will, it's also the matter in the ordinary manner that all our economies are controlled. That is to debate, see if we can reach them. We cannot reach them. And to look at how we then are advised to reach them accordingly. And maybe that's where we can make a final decision for the future. But that's how we answer the whole question. David, you want?
Yeah, look, I agree with you. I don't think it was any point in getting further opinions. I mean, even if you look with respect, Dr. Ambrosini at Mr. Katz's opinion, he says very little. He basically takes it as read. And my point would be, why did the section not read 73 to a cabinet member or a deputy minister or a member of parliament may introduce? Why does it not read like that? Why does it say only? Because it's come for a different purpose. So I don't think it is clear cut. I think it's also clear to you, I don't know how Dr. Ambrosini can argue on the one hand that every member has the right to introduce the bill and then want to put in a requirement of 10%. I mean, that's a contradiction. So I really think that the procedure we've got is the correct one, and I'd want to sort of basically move that. I mean, we can refine it, which is that members can table legislative. Oh, and then the doctors for life thing. I mean, with respect to Dr. Ambrosini, he should read it. It's clear cut. Bills got struck down, and they were quite specific relating to the public participation process. I would want to suggest that we, largely follow the amendments proposed by the table staff, which I think does refine it. I think Mr. Pretorius's concern about 2235A is there. There's been a procedure set out, but the House still has the power to reject the legislative proposal for whatever reason. So what happens in the committee is this procedural stuff, vexatious, already going to be dealt with, et cetera, et cetera. But the advantage for the members where democracy is exercised is that committee. If it takes reports to the House, and it's the House that has to decide, but at that point it is only a legislative proposal. If it were a bill, I argue have all those consequences. So, Chair, really in short, I would want to argue that we do look at I don't know if we can finalize it now or not, but I'm generally happy with the table staff's amendments, with the exception of under 234, the new D, the requirement of the 20%. 20 members, sorry, that section should not be there.
Can I indicate this? At our last meeting, I was so upbeat under the impression that we had almost reached on the general direction, and that our revisit of the issue today would be more on. But it became clear that there was still some analysis arising from the kind of discussion that food. I wish to think in running off because it's clear that there would be no point in the labor saving. Everybody including the number seems to have agreed in large measure with the draft so-called rule, which essentially would say that yes, we can have a committee such as the one that exists currently. Yes, there is a problem in the way it operates currently in that there are no set of criteria that define the parameters and the theory of what it is that the fact what criteria should inform the kind of recommendation.
that therefore it is necessary to have the settled guidelines. And essentially the guidelines were in large measure calculated to steer it away from the substantive issue and focus on issues of technical nature given the generic and said once a proposal has passed muster with it, then it goes to the house. And the house says, okay, fine, we think that there's merit in this proposal going to a consumer committee. What committee comes with, voila, a vote from who? Mr. Amber Finney, member of the opposition party. That is it. Goes as far as it's been passed into an act of parliament. That possibility provided for in the procedure that's been proposed, it has always been a possibility. And our rule, hence we have acts that have resulted from private members so I thought that that was really, really important. That it is clear that there are concerns about the issue that we talked about, what we want to see in the house. I do not know if any amount of deliberation, public deliberation, is likely to take us beyond where we are able to go today. I had wanted to. What the implications of something called a vote is in terms of the operationalization of the machinery of parliament could also have some transcend committees and other structures for issues relating to the publications that are there. There's a whole host of issues that one can instrument in our privacy to build before Parliament would have. Of course, all of that does not have to be the final analysis. The Assembly will pass it in the SOP, will pass it in the President's organizing by that thing. But at least it has a fair chance of going all the way and to get there. A lot of resources, a lot of institutional machinery which have gone into action. So it really is not a by the way thing like the statement. So that was the context of understanding what we're doing. But let me not take it further than that. I don't know if there's anybody else who wants to have a final before I can push the message. That is the draft rules that are calculated to be an improvement on the workings of this policy. That's in our brief, and that's what we will present back to the rule committee on. And if there are any adjustments to the actual proposed draft rules, we do that. But otherwise, everybody is happy with it. So we will revert back to the rule committee and let our current. Committee, you know, decide accordingly and go to the house with whatever decide. Anything else that anybody would want to
do? Mr. Chairman, if I understand it correctly, you are summarizing as the committee being happy with the draft submitted by the table. If that's what you're doing, I need to record that I cannot be part of the general happiness. And I agree for the fact that I expressed before, because I don't address the problem. On a technical note, I don't think you should bring this any further until both the English and the technical aspect is polished. I mean, you cannot have something against the purpose of the Constitution, something against the object of the Constitution. And the same thing, A and B are the same. maybe talk about the problems, although the same with the very constitution. So AMD must be collapsed into unconstitutional. That's all that there is to it. I know what single is, but I don't know what vexatious is. What vexatious means, vexatious for someone. Vexatious is a contractual term. The contractual term comes from contract law, where the comparison between the two performance and counter-performance can be done with the parameter of the time between the two parties. A deal cannot be vexatious. Then, over and above the technical comments, I'm not registered my lack of a deal.
Thank you. There has been suggested the amendment to the draft rule. Does anyone want to discuss the view on that? I just indicate that we no longer discuss the underlying principles without looking at the technical form of the draft rule.
Okay. No, I mean, as I indicated, I would like 2, 3, 4, the 20 members. So I don't know if that that could go in any event inconsistent with Mr. Katz's opinion. Sorry? 10, 20. Sorry? 2, 3, 4, 1D. Yeah, the underlying thing. Yeah. Okay. Then Chair, on the only other amendment effectively being made. Okay. So that's this from the table staff. Okay. No. I mean, there's a reference to 235A. Then 235A itself. I mean, these are rules for a start. I don't have a problem with the separation of A and B, because B is specific. And does everybody have the right document? Because it's Dr. Ambrosini's draft, and then there's this big batch, the one at the end. So I do think that even though initiating legislation beyond the legislative competence of the Assembly is unconstitutional and covered by A, it does set it out better that you've had it as a criteria. Spirit, purport, and object, I suppose one could get into an argument. Maybe Ms. Tribuno or Mr. Hundick could explain why they use those words. Maybe, Chair, that's the best. And then the frivolous or vexatious, I mean, it's frivolous or vexatious litigation. That's where it comes from. I can quite see, with the greatest of respect to Dr. Ambrosini, the vexatious tabling of legislative proposals. But maybe, Chair, maybe the issue would be, because it's in effect the only one section we're looking at, shouldn't the table, the drafters, explain why they use those words?
And Mr. Chairman, an additional point, I don't understand what will result in a money deal mean.
Either
a money deal or not.
It's an legislative proposal that will result in a money deal.
Yeah, that's the context for that. Can I just indicate that obviously Mr. Curry will stick to his proposal relating to civilist and regulation. My position is that we considered, even as we introduced additional criteria, that does not afford to be an expert lawyer. To his credit, nevertheless, I think he's made a very good choice.
Yes,
I think he was very, what is the English word?
But there are frivolous and vexatious points of order that sometimes get raised.
Oh, definitely.
I'm
surprised David is not having a word. Yeah,
well,
he
will.
But anyway, but let me know. Try and steal your thunder, maybe allow you.
No, that's fair to say, but I think the issue words come from very, very long time back from probably the other common tools of other institutions where they're using that term as a fixed term.
So you're saying that
it's a very old usage term as well, but I think Marina will probably bring that up.
Yeah.
Right. Anyone can speak about number D, pre-empt similar legislation soon to be introduced. I'm a little bit worried about the vagueness of the word soon. We shouldn't limit that to a time frame of, say, 6 months, within a period of 6 months. What is the period we decided on?
This is the moment to really come up with a time frame. So, my
Arina can respond to some of this. Maybe let me allow you the opportunity to just clarify a whole lot of things that you can do.
Can I maybe insist on that point? Because I don't know if this would help Mr. Pretorius, but I mean, remember at the start of 235A, the committee will confine its consideration of the legislative proposal to whether it preempts similar legislation soon to be introduced. So I would suggest, I agree it sounds vague as it is there, but it doesn't really matter how long it's going to come or how long it's going to take. It doesn't mean that if the executive is going to introduce legislation this year, next year, or before the next election, that that precludes the House discussing the legislation. It's just an issue that the committee must consider. That's all. So it's not a requirement. If it were a requirement that if the executive is bringing similar legislation within a short space of time, this bill must be rejected, then that would be a problem for lack of certainty. But it's a matter that the committee must consider this aspect. That's all. It doesn't tell them what to do with it. It doesn't tell the committee what to do with it. So I would argue that it's the 6 months or whatever doesn't matter. It would be the issue for the committee to say, executive, are you going to bring a bill like this? When are you going to bring it? Okay, you're going to bring it in 2013. Okay, fine, thanks. Now we'll talk about it. And then in the deliberations, it would be, 2013 is some way off. Why don't we go for it?
The concept of spirit was quite not yet. We had a bit of discussion on the last one with the staff. And what I advise is that we eventually operate in a political environment. We do not only implement the law, that would be the narrow one and the court and the legal system generally, we make it. And politics plays into the process of law. Issues of perception, of sentiment, due cases in the world within our use of issues. I mean, you think sometimes, not necessarily because the law permits or prohibits it, but the school, you know, you take into consideration, because the public decision, we there for the citizens, the aspirations, sensitivity, and so on. But to have broad concepts, thinking concepts like a port, a different spirit, like how the constitution itself in our context, given the environment in which we operate, perfectly know that. We know that. Strictly legally speaking, something is either constitutional or not. But we're not so much dealing with the burden of primarily of determining what constitutional or not. Ultimately, the constitutional court is dead. We lean to other things. We lean to looking at the interests of society, taking society, all those.
feel that it doesn't have to be, you know, it started with that in the way we put it. So that was basically the thinking behind that. But I leave it to the public, of course, to people to run this for 1 year again. It's a similar thing that we raised about, and of course the underlying principle that we're saying that all of it is not calculated to say you have passed hurdle one, you've passed hurdle two, you've passed hurdle two, so hurdle three. Now on a score sheet of 1 to 5, you pass all 5 hurdles and therefore approve. Or if on a score of 1 to 5, you say all for 3 or 2, therefore you don't pass that kind of thing. Those things are mere indicia, if you like. You remember the things that need to be done for the process in indicia. So this is things that you take into consideration that inform the integration in advance.
No, I mean, the decision is not taken by the committee, it's taken by the House.
The committee has not been
by the House.
I know, but the committee makes a recommendation.
To the House, which the House can accept or reject. And in speaking when that issue is debated, anyone can speak, even if there's no debate, there can be declarations from parties. So there is that opportunity. Because I think that I mean, obviously with some of these factors, Chairperson, you know, obviously... A, B, and E. If they are hurdles, A is basically goes against the spirit of the court book, if it's unconstitutional, beyond the legislative competence, and E will result in the money bill. Those are hurdles. If those factors are found by the private members committee, that would be the end of it. But the other factors are subjective. Like specifically the future legislation aspect. And it's then up to the committee and the member introducing to decide what they want to do with it. But ultimately, I mean, look, what I was going to say is, I mean, every committee in Parliament has we're all representatives of parties. In many committees, we're able and to function without following a strict party line so that we split down the middle the whole time. So one would have... Yeah.
Let's not belabor this. I think we all have it. Of course, obviously the committee will advise the House that we have found in our consideration of this proposal the following thing, that this bill offends principle 116 for its part, and therefore we recommend that the House does not, you know, allow the proposal to go through. But yes, the underlying principle is whatever you say in your report, you're basically making a recommendation to the House, presenting your own observation, finding on matters that have now been first stated in the whole that you must make on the proposal. It's not necessarily to mean that you haven't said anything. Yes, what you have said is likely to have a profound influence on the House, which direction it would take in considering that particular proposal. I don't think we need to be bogged down on the question of what is the hurdle, what's the right blood problem. The set of criteria that would inform the work of the committee will report on the report and may find them on the specific criteria that are described, and that would be the way to do it. All right. And I think that to me is fine. Have we resolved the actual formulation? Are we confident that we now have resolved the vexatious and thing that says it comes from the Westminster system? We were in the frame, otherwise, we would have come from that.
No, it was just Llewellyn's the bell, but I think that's the end of the session.
Oh, my word. Oh. So, I'm just saying, I get a sense that this tone of result could run through to a point where we could actually, of course, with the underlying.
Yes.
I just confirm that the idea with these amendments are really to make it easier for ordinary members to get their proposal further than the current scenario where can you really stop it especially? The way I think it's drafted is that attempt to get to a situation where more members get a chance to get their proposals debated in the House for the House to start with the members to carry on further. At the moment, it's a question on the minority side.
But I'm glad there's a sense of appreciation from the opposition, not me saying it because it may come across at some time. Yes, I just wanted to agree with this point. This criteria, far from expanding the discretion of the committee, actually contracts it. And that in effect. It's like a greater space for the proposed potential to go through, given the limited power that this has.
I was simply going to concur with my colleague and say that we probably haven't got everything that we would like to have got, but I think that this is an important occasion in terms of reaching some kind of agreement that we certainly. I think that I don't doubt that the situation that we've arrived at now is infinitely better than what we've had before. I think that some of the points that Dr. Bertini has made are relevant, but I think that where we are now is exactly where, not exactly, it's certainly a point in the right direction, and I'm going to be ready with that.
And I don't
want
to throw the bus, the baby in the bus.
Chair, sorry, can you see why I've been nice to
Ariella? And I hope Dr. Mulder I hope Dr. Mulder will be co-opted onto this train as well.
I've looked at those rules. I don't have anything particularly to say. This is now the rules for the establishment of the Standing Committee on Finance and Appropriation. Can I maybe suggest, I don't know what other members feel. I mean, maybe we could say let's stand over. Okay, I think if people haven't looked at it, it's kind of okay. Shutting up. I've shut up.
It's always a struggle to convene. I hope that you will indulge me in the same way as you did today. Thank you very much.
Sir, may I on my side express my appreciation for the good quality of chairmanship and the constancy in which you have conducted this proceeding.
And the good spirit of the other members of the committee.
You're really good.
Well.